Welcome to the Natural Health 365 podcast, natural solutions for everyday problems. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit naturalhealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. And now, here's your host, Jonathan Landsman.
All right, thank you for joining us. Our show today, Cancer Cures, How Big Pharma Suppresses the Truth. Cancer still remains a mystery to most uneducated patients suffering from a wide variety of health issues related to this dreadful disease. Most conventionally trained physicians see little point in talking to cancer patients about diet and lifestyle changes. We get that. In fact, to this day, the standard of care, if you will, is still surgery, chemotherapy, and/or radiation, and nothing else is offered. But what about all the scientifically validated natural remedies for cancer? I'm talking about foods, herbs, medicinal mushrooms, and teas proven to prevent, even reverse, cancerous conditions. I personally know of many people given no hope by Western medicine that have cured themselves without the need for toxic drugs or surgical procedures. Today, on the Natural Health 365 podcast, I'll introduce you to a cancer survivor who created the Annie Appleseed Project, a nonprofit that provides information, education, advocacy, and awareness for people with cancer and their families and friends who are interested in complementary or alternative medicine and natural therapies from a patient's perspective. Before we meet our guests, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. And now, please join me in welcoming Anne Fonfa to our show. Anne, welcome. It's great to have you.
Oh, I'm really happy to be on the show with you.
Anne, how much evidence does it take, I got to ask you this, for an item from the natural health world, if you will, to become acceptable in the mainstream? It seems like it's taken forever.
You know, the problem is that most of our mainstream is trained by Big Pharma to accept only what they call level one trial. That's a randomized, multi-centered clinical trial. It's very, very expensive. And really the only industry that can afford it is from Big Pharma. So in the natural world, because things can't be patented, they end up in smaller level trials, lots of them. In fact, thousands of them on almost every topic that we care about, but it's not enough to persuade doctors. So they're always waiting, even if it's about food. You know, they're always waiting for the big randomized trial, and I have felt for a long time that's really not the way to approach it. So we have a lot of studies, thousands, on so much. Every vitamin you can think of, exercise, that took a million years, stress reduction, but it doesn't reach mainstream until it becomes a pharma-style trial. Big problem.
You know, something that seems maybe unrelated to this, Anne, is like it took 50 years, right? 5-0 for DDT to be taken away, right? Like, oh, it's something so terrible now, right? But it took 50 years for us to realize that. I mean, this is just another example of like something just taking forever. And it's so obvious. I mean, just for example, all these cancer remedies that I know you're so aware of, they're not in the medical literature, you know, for them to actually see like a medical textbook. And to actually have it gone over with medical students in medical school, which is why so much of them that have paid so much money for a medical education, I mean, with all due respect, I'm saying it, but they're dumbed down. They really have no idea.
Well, now, I've heard on your podcast when any of the doctors or speakers talk about nutrition, and the MDs will say they've had maybe a half an hour of medical training in nutrition. And that's where I think the problem really starts. The doctors are on such a different page than our modern patients. And if people say, doc, is there anything I should change? The doctor is most likely to say, oh, no, just do whatever you've been doing. It's fine. And we know it's not fine whatsoever. The first step, and my organization suggests this, we call it three steps for health. The first step is to eat more fruits and vegetables. I mean, it's such a clear-cut way to be healthier. Most modern citizens, especially in the U.S., are just not getting enough fruits and vegetables. And then they're going to their doctor to say, oh, doc, I think I need a pill because something's wrong. Or the doc says, oh, you need a pill because something's wrong, when in fact it's the most basic reason. We're not eating properly. We're not getting exercise. We're too stressed. You know, we don't know how to handle it. That's just where it starts.
And, you know, we talked about this before we got started today. We often tell people, and all the time, we're bombarded with emails on a daily basis, our phone calls to our customer service, and we're saying, look, if you just listen to one of these shows once a week, just tuning in, reading some of the articles on Natural Health 365, I'm sure getting involved with Annie Appleseed Project, the same thing, you're going to become such an expert, way more than your doctor. And what we really mean by that, just to clarify it, is if you feel like you're smarter than your doctor, or maybe I should say it this way, if you feel like your physician can't really help you anymore because you've gone beyond where they're at, then the bottom line is you got to walk away from that one, you know, wish them well. I'm sure they're a nice person in most cases, not, you know, flat out rude or too arrogant, and just find someone that really resonates with you. Isn't that, you know, fair to say?
Yeah, there are relatively few integrative oncologists. So if someone is getting conventional treatment, it's very difficult to get some kind of information on complementary or integrative. And they'd have to go to a podcast like yours website or my website in order to get the information. It's there. The doctors, you know, we've got them in a pincer. The insurance companies are on one end, and the time situation is on the other. They don't seem to have time to even read the news articles, like yesterday or the day before's announcement that processed meat is so unhealthy. Not that this is a surprise to you and I, or probably a lot of your listeners, but for many physicians, this may be the first time they've actually come on their radar, you know, that this is a terrible direction. But they've been saying to especially people with cancer all these years, oh, it doesn't matter what you eat. You can have anything. Have fatty food so you keep your weight up, which is such a horrible idea.
So agree with you, Anne. It is so true. Now, I want to shift gears for a moment. I mean, you say that advocates, and I want you to define what you mean by advocates so nobody is confused out there. Advocates allow big pharma to control the conversation about cancer drugs and even cancer treatments. Talk to us about what you mean by that, okay?
Okay, so advocate is someone who's thinking beyond their own personal situation. So someone who may have had cancer, probably has, and in my view, goes to cancer meetings and talks about issues on a larger scale than their personal situation. So, for example, I suggested many years ago that it might be a great idea to do a clinical trial which looked at people taking chemotherapy but also taking antioxidant supplements. And pharma said on stage to me, many different representatives who were on a panel, oh, you know, Anne, we can't patent that. And dead silence, because they had nothing else to say. If they cannot patent it, then how can we be talking about it? But as an advocate, that's not the end of the conversation, because it should be about us, the people with cancer, the people who advocate for people with cancer, and the people who are trying to pay attention. And therefore, expanding the conversation to be about the things we advocates and patients care about is what's really important, but it isn't talked about. The doctors here get their education subsidized by Big Pharma, and they're trained in that modality, and they don't get to hear the other things, which is why it's important for advocates to attend meetings and ask questions and challenge what's going on.
So, Anne, I think this is something that's very, very important to point out, and I think that it's a lot of people still have this idea, you know, this brainwashing, if you will, that healthcare providers are always thinking in the best interest of the person that's suffering from an illness. And although there's a lot of well-meaning people out there, there's just so many forces these days, like what you just described, where there are people in Big Pharma who are not interested in anything that is good for people, just what they can patent and make money on. It's not what people think. If they went to these meetings, they would really understand. And a lot of the doctors who say they want to help people, they don't realize how much they're being shut out of so much good information that would help people. You know what I'm saying, right?
There are really different forces at play, and I find it amazing. And I drew a cartoon once of a doctor facing to the right and a doctor facing to left, and in the middle is the patient. The patient population, the people who are suffering from illness, in my case in particular, cancer. To me, the really strange issue is how forgotten the patient is, because everyone's got their focus, and it's not the patient so much. Yes, I agree with you that individuals are caring and really aware, but the whole cancer thing has become such a big business. It's so much about money, and we see that when people are given conventional treatment till a week before they die. You know there's no possibility of benefit, and yet, you know, it's just either the doctors are accommodating a family request or they're not telling the truth. And that's really troublesome. And then when you have an integrative oncologist, and I said this the other day, when you have someone who practices an alternative method, if you do not get well from their alternative method, you may be dropped just like you may be dropped from a conventional doctor's treatment center if you don't follow their directions. And that's really troubling. We lost focus on the person suffering the illness, and that's where it should be.
And I agree with you. There's a lot of other forces, like a person's arrogance, their ego, so many things. And it probably just goes back to what we were saying before. All of this training that people don't realize, this hundreds of thousands of dollars that people personally spend to go through medical training, the conventional medical training doesn't prepare anyone for what really faces them when they go out there into the world. They're afraid of litigation, you know, all of these things. It's like you say, it's crazy. It has nothing to do with helping the person get away from a cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, it's a big issue. I mean, they have too many patients. There's too many hours of crazy stuff going on. You know, it's said that a primary care physician has to read 16 articles a day to keep up with the medical literature. And that's not happening, obviously. There's no time for that. I can barely do that, and my whole job is gathering information and sharing it. So it's very hard for a doctor. I feel badly for them, but I also feel it's possible to learn new things, and all too many or too few are trying to do that, and that's troublesome.
And, you know, the title of this podcast, when we're talking about big pharma suppressing the truth, I mean, it's way beyond the obvious blatant examples of, you know, trying to suppress information, manipulate data. I mean, we've got the stories of Merck actually trying to manipulate data so that they can simply hold on to their patent for the MMR vaccine. I mean, I could go on and on. It's actual criminal behavior. But beyond that, you're talking about a system that is changing rapidly every day, whereas the uneducated person goes into a hospital, let's say, God forbid. And what's happening is I'm hearing this from people who are going in these days. I mean, thank God I haven't gone in lately, but they sound like horror stories. People are going in and they feel like they're not even being treated like a human being. These carts are being wheeled around from bed to bed. They're beeping people in with like their bracelets. You know, they have like these little labels, these codes, and they beep them in so that they're now digitally recorded, that the nurse is right by the bedside. Here's your pill. That's it. They don't even ask what the person's name is. It's as long as that digital imprint has come out right on a computer screen, then here's your pill, and then that's it. Move on to another bed. I mean, this is really what's going on.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I just read an editorial a short while ago by a medical writer who was commenting on the need for what they call a hospitalist, a doctor who oversees your case while you're in the hospital. And that's been a lot of talk in oncology, is that we have this tumor board and we have this organized method, and you go from one expert to another within the hospital. But most people are not reporting that it's easy or it's working the way it should. And now there's, of course, as you probably know, patient navigators, nurse navigators, because it is such a complexity to be in the hospital. And there's so many things going on. And if you see more than one physician, which most people will, they might prescribe something for you and not look at the records clearly and not see that you've already got something similar prescribed, or who's making an attempt to look at your existing medication versus what they've added. It's a really big problem. There's a lot of harms taking place.
And Anne, I know you're 100% in alignment with me on this, how important it is to make sure that you have people that you trust and love close to you. Because I tell you, I mean, I get goosebumps just thinking about this. It's chilling to think that, God forbid, somebody gets injured or they're suffering from a major illness and they get blindsided by it. Something really bad happens. They're in the hospital. There's no advocate right next to them when they need someone the most. This is when the worst of medicine can happen to someone, whether it's intentional or not. That's not the point. The point is, without an advocate, it is so easy for things to happen and the patient would have little or no energy to even defend themselves. You know what I'm saying.
Well, it's the worst time to have to be an advocate for yourself when you're really ill. It doesn't work out. And of course, it is very hard to have someone near you all the time, and that, you know, that's not even feasible. But I think the key thing is in raising understanding and raising awareness so that when people need help, they know where to go. And that's important. They know, you know, a website to check out, a friend to call, someone to ask questions of. I mean, just this week, I spoke to three different people who wanted some information from from our organization about steps they could take for the cancer they're dealing with. And each of them was in a different aspect of it. Two of them had already had conventional treatment and one did not. One wanted to go on to have, alternative because the conventional treatment hadn't cured them, but I hardly ever like to use that C word. And they're looking for information, and it's harder now because there's so much information. It's hard to sort through what is driven by commerce and what's driven by a desire to help. And that's where we like the advocate websites, because they have really useful information from what we call the patient perspective.
And I'm glad you're talking about this, Anne, because this is something that I'm more aggressively talking about. And, maybe that's not the best word to use, but I can't think of another way of just really suggesting to people that you be very, very careful what you bookmark. Be very careful what you're organizing in front of you all the time. I mean, I threw my TV out, so thank God for that. On my computer, I'm trying the best I can to control my environment. Who do you like on Facebook? Who are you following on Twitter? All of these things, they may seem so trivial, right? But you know what? When you're really controlling your environment more, you're being more careful about the people that you're choosing to hang out with and be your friends, and all of this stuff is so meaningful because those are the places where you get your impressions and where you continue to either learn or, should I say, not learn what you really need as you go forward. It's important to subscribe to the newsletters that you want. Be very mindful of your email inbox and what you see and what you don't see. Unsubscribe to the garbage. Get rid of it. And obviously, hopefully you like Natural Health 365 and Annie Appleseed Project. But, the point is, no matter what it is, be more mindful of what you're surrounding yourself with.
So, Jonathan, that reminds me that I stay on Facebook a lot and try to share information. And one thing that I note, no matter which direction people are headed in, almost everyone, especially in the U.S., is seeking that magic bullet, a single thing they can do to cure themselves of whatever ails them. And I have to say, I've been an advocate for 20 years. I'm a 22-year breast cancer survivor. And what I believe and what I see is there is no single answer to any disease, especially cancer. It's a combination of healthy behaviors. It's a combination of treatments. It's a combination of things, of treatments that work for you. And we don't really know what that is. So there's a lot of guesswork involved, but there's no magic thing. And right now, the magic bullet is cannabis. Not that I don't think it has a place. In our conference next year, we're going to be talking about it and have a lot of speakers. But it is not a magic bullet. It's one more thing that can be tried or added to protocol.
And I agree with you 100%. We're going to get into a lot of other very interesting information. Hang in there. This podcast, we are just halfway through. I want to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. And let's continue this conversation. Do you think alternative practitioners keep good enough records for their successes and, for lack of a better way of putting it, their failures, when they're not doing so well? For example, whatever happened with Dr. Brzezinski? We've heard much about that in the past with these clinical trials. Talk to us about what you see going on out there.
Okay, so that in a way that's two different things, because Dr. Brzezinski has had FDA-approved clinical trials, what they call phase 1, phase 2, and phase 3, but the FDA has to approve at the end and agree to have a treatment go forward. They have not done that with Dr. Brzezinski, even though he's submitted data for many years. For other doctors, they're kind of burned and burned out, and they feel that they've been taken advantage of by the mainstream being so dismissive of what they've done. And many of them don't keep good enough records to be able to show the kind of clinical work that's important to get the next phase. On the other hand, you have the National Cancer Institute has its office for cancer complementary and alternative therapies, and they have had best case series for many years, and they've been able to move some information forward by asking doctors to submit a series of case studies, which is really the story of a patient who did well on a particular treatment. And that's great, but that doesn't move forward either because it's at the control of either the National Cancer Institute or the Food and Drug Administration, and they don't really have a great impetus to bring it forward. I mean, as I said, I've been around for 20 years doing this work, and I have yet to see anything move forward at a pace that would be approved of by a person with cancer. It's really troubling. And I've also been at several cancer meetings from ASCO, the American Society for Clinical Oncology, where they've been incredibly dismissive about treatments that I know either weren't properly studied or weren't studied at all.
And talk about how these studies are actually done. I think this is very worthwhile for just a few minutes, just to shed some light on this, including the problems that you see with some of these methods, you know?
So there are several ways to do clinical trials. You can have a single-arm study where you decide to try yoga with people going through chemotherapy. And you might have a group of 30 people or 25 people that you're looking at as they go through time. If you have a randomized trial, you will have maybe 60 people, and half are on one arm and half are on the other. And arm means the group that's being compared, or the groups that are being compared. So one group might have chemo alone, one group might have chemo with yoga. But it's rare that that's done in a randomized setting, and yet that is what the medical community is trained to accept. So that's a problem. Another kind of trial, what they call phase one, which is FDA approved, a phase one trial is done for safety, to see whether human beings can try this particular thing. But unfortunately, very often the choice is to do what they call the maximum tolerated dose. And I disapprove of that because I see no reason where the maximum tolerated dose should be chosen. That isn't scientific. And in fact, it's been shown when that's studied that a middle range dose is generally better than the highest dose. And especially if it's a toxic therapy, because people will suffer more the higher the dose. A lot of complications in the way. And then you have a phase two, which includes more people. So you might have twice as many as in a phase one trial, and that's about what they call efficacy. And efficacy doesn't even mean the effect of the drug. It just means that it shows something happened while it was taken. And people who participate in phase one or phase two are not necessarily thought to benefit from the trial itself. So they volunteer to do that without necessarily expecting a benefit on their own. That's a kind of a complication. A phase three trial is where there's many more people, between 200 and 300, that kind of thing, or even more. And generally, when it's an FDA-approved trial, that is, or a trial that's going to be submitted to the FDA for a drug approval or a device approval, that includes quite a few people, and it usually has two arms. But unfortunately, the standards are not what you think. I mean, for one thing, the maximum tolerated dose, but another issue might be a trial can be done against a placebo, which is supposedly a drug that doesn't really do anything. It's a pill that looks like the one you're taking that's supposed to do something, but, you know, that's a whole other issue. But part of that is a new drug can be compared against an old drug that's not really directly the same, and that's really a problem. You know, it only has to show a very small value to actually be approved by FDA. And in fact, there's been an article circulating that of the drugs that were introduced into the breast cancer field doing what they call accelerated approval, none of them have shown an extension of survival. And to me, survival is the key thing. They've been using what they call surrogate endpoints and experimenting with how the outcomes are. But if they do long-term follow-up, which is rare anyway, they have found there's been no advantage in survival. And that's horrible. I mean, people are having toxicity in mainstream for no reason. And this is why I continue to support with all my heart and soul the idea of at least complementary therapies during conventional treatment and the availability of so-called alternatives, because we need them.
I mean, how many people would be absolutely shocked to find out that these new drugs, quote unquote, new drugs for cancer, like you say, have, you know, wow, look at this, a block of a small group of patients, and this is an approved drug already, FDA approved, a small block of patients, they lived like 4 weeks or 8 weeks longer. You know, their quality of life was horrific, all the toxic effects of these drugs. And this is what they're saying is okay to go out onto the market, and they're making billions of dollars on several drugs that will go nameless. But the reality is, this is what's going on. People would find this impossible to believe, but it's the truth, isn't it, Anne?
Yeah, it's a terrible truth. Almost all the drugs that are approved have a 2 to 3 month so-called advantage, and it's not survival advantage. It's what they call disease-free. So you have a 2 or 3 month period where your disease does not get worse, and then it gets worse, and it could get much worse. And that seems to be the standard for approval. And I have commented on this many times at FDA hearings directly in Washington, D.C., but also in the D.C. area, and also at meetings by saying a company will spend $600 or $700 million, and this is what they got. They wasted their money our time, their resources, our lives. It's just crazy. It's a completely crazy upside-down system. In fact, I heard a speaker at a media conference once talking about a drug, and he said, and we had a 2.7-month advantage, and the room is completely quiet. And he says, no, in oncology, that's really good. You know, it was like a joke. In oncology, that's really good. It's ridiculous. It's not good. And we can't, you know, but advocates too, you know, there are people who, of course, have a different viewpoint than me. And some of the advocates I know have said over the years, well, someone got helped by it. And, you know, that might be true. But if you're going to spend $600 or $700 million, you would hope a lot of people get a benefit, not just a few. It's stupid.
Yeah, if it was the average person out there running a business, I mean, first of all, they'd all be out of business. But nobody would nobody would tolerate it. Nobody would. If you were wasting that much money, somebody in your family, you would have put a stop to it a long time ago. I want to thank our sponsor one last time, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. And to close out this program, let's talk about a few more very important things. First of all, why do you think that patient-centered evidence, like your personal story, you've been doing this over 2 decades, are dismissed by conventional medicine? What's going on here?
Yeah, they have this concept called spontaneous remission, and luckily for us, Dr. Kelly Turner turned that around and called it radical remission, people who put their efforts into it. The belief has, and again, this is training, their belief is that it really can't be done, therefore you didn't do it. You either were misdiagnosed from the beginning, or, you know, something acted on a later date that you didn't realize was working. I did no chemo, no radiation, so they can never say to me, oh, no, it's because you did chemo that it's okay. It was not done for me, and I am a survivor anyway. And, in fact, many oncologists are shocked to hear that I could survive without chemo and radiation. They don't even know it's possible, which is really scary.
And that goes back to what we were saying before, Anne. Like you say, it is just beyond their imagination. You keep using the word scary, because that's exactly what people are going in front of every single day. They go, I don't understand. My doctor didn't tell me about vitamin C. He didn't tell me about vitamin D. He didn't tell me about any of these herbal teas or things that I could eat or drink to boost immune function. You know, and even if a person on an intuitive level, you know, says that makes sense, right? They keep going into the conventional medical office and they're not getting it from them. And there's just that little subtle thing that's tugging at them like, well, you know, maybe it's really hokey. Maybe I got to listen to the expert. He went to school. He spent all this money. He's got to know more than me. And that's what goes into just giving up your rights, if you will, giving up your power to make decisions over your own health. I mean, to me, that's the scariest thing. Don't give away your power.
No, I agree. And that's why I started the Annie Appleseed Project online, because I wanted people to be able to find good information and as much, you know, evidence-based ideas as possible so they can download it, show their doctor. And there are some doctors who are more open. And so I sometimes tell people, if your doctor's not paying attention to what you're interested in, you have to fire that doctor and get another one. There are ways. It's very difficult and scary to do it on your own. I had to do that, but, you know, it wasn't great. I mean, there were many times when I wished that I had someone, you know, that I could talk to about it. I mean, I had plenty of people I talked to, but I made the final decisions without a medical doctor's input, and that was annoying. But, you know, nowadays there's much more available information, as we've talked about, and you can join in groups, and you can listen to the Natural Health 365, and you can get information in reliable places, and that helps. I mean, I've been, because of being involved in the video series that happened recently, I've been getting a lot of contact from people who want information, and that's great. I mean, it's really making a difference. More people are reached all the time. No one should have to do conventional treatment without understanding that there are other things to be done.
One of the last things I want to talk about now, Anne, and we're going to also talk about something really exciting that you're working on coming up at the beginning of 2016, but before we get there, what do we do to change this system? And I just want to add that, you know, something very current happened with a friend of mine who's a medical doctor, went to a conference in San Diego, and I see the system is changing big time. He was surprised that in the room, half of the medical doctors that were there, interested in integrative medicine, but all conventionally trained doctors, half of them in the room were saying that they wanted to see vaccinations to be something of a choice and to spread out the amount of vaccines that are given, not so many all at once. The other half were into mandatory vaccines, but he was amazed that the room was split, like in a negative way. And I turned to him and I said, are you kidding me? That's an amazing conference with hundreds of doctors. Half of them want to now see that we don't do mandatory, that we give choices to people. The world is changing. But Anne, talk to us. What do you see with all of the work that you do? How do we change this system around? How do we help accelerate things?
So, you know, I've been going to mainstream conferences for many, many years, and I think it's really important for them to hear our voices and to hear that not everybody is satisfied with the status quo. And I understand that they're, you know, you mentioned malpractice in the beginning, and that's a great fear. No doctor wants to get in trouble, and the standards of care, what they call the gold standard of care, you know, which is nonsensical, but it's something they're required to offer their patients, and they have a commitment to it, both financial and protecting their butts, you know. But overall, being available, being there to have conversations. We've been, in the Apple Project, we've been doing posters for the last couple of years in which we bring a poster to a conference, you know, accepted by the committee and shown in the conference, and talking about simple integrative things so they can start somewhere and give their patients some help. And sometimes we feel like once that ball is rolling, you can't really stop it. The ideas are out there, and they get accepted by more and more people over time, and that's what I think has been happening. Because when 22 years ago when I was diagnosed and I decided to change my diet and exercise and stuff like that, and my doctor thought I was out of my mind, he actually said to me, if you do yoga, he said to me, you're going to kill yourself. That could kill you. I mean, what is that? You know, but that's totally changed. So even though it's snail pace, it's still happening. And I believe it's my responsibility, because I'm willing and able to do it, to go to the mainstream and talk to them and show them that they don't have the only path.
Okay, so exciting stuff on the horizon for you. I know you work very hard every year on this. You've got a cancer conference that comes up at the beginning of 2016. I want you to talk about that, because if somebody really wants to get more involved, this is just one perfect example of where you just jump in and mingle. It's a great place to network. Talk about what you're doing. And it's down in Florida, right?
Yes, we hold it in West Palm Beach, Florida, because we're a Florida-based corporate nonprofit. And what we've done is, this is our 10th conference. What we do is bring together speakers from many different disciplines, because we've said as a sub-theme all the time, there's many paths to wellness. And we want to show people that you can listen to practitioners, patients, advocates, you know, nurses, you can listen to homeopaths, acupuncturists, and get a little bit of information from all of them to help you set up your own protocol. You mentioned networking. So 250 people go to the conference. They bring their stories, which we call patient-centered evidence, their real experiences, and they talk to each other. And people can meet someone with the same kind of disease as them and using the same protocols, a lot of different things that might be helpful. We serve organic food. We're walking that walk. And we have very, you know, interesting exhibits, things that we vetted to make sure that they're reliable and meaningful for people with cancer. We have lots of practitioners these days who come to the meeting. About a third of our audience will be people who are in the health field and want to learn more. We do give continuing education credits. It's the only thing that Annie Appleseed Project charges for when we host a meeting, because otherwise we couldn't do it. But we try to keep the price down. It hasn't changed in 4 years. Well, it's $249 for a 2.5-day experience. Next year, February 25th to 27th, are our dates in West Palm, so the weather's great. We guarantee a minimum of 75 degrees. But our goal is to also focus on medical cannabis for next year, because for one thing, Florida is going to be voting on it in the November 2016 election, and we believe it will be legal, at least for medical use. So we thought we'd bring in some experts from around the country who've been working with cannabis and have some ideas about how to prescribe it, how to use it. And again, it's not a magic bullet, but it will be one of the things we do. We have people who talk about fitness from a cancer survivor perspective. We have a Qigong master who does a class. A lot of different really interesting programs, and you know, it's really valuable time. Again, this is our 10th conference, so we know that it's a meaningful event for people, and a lot of information, a lot of great networking, great friends are made, and just really meaningful.
And Anne, what's the name of the conference?
We've been calling it the Evidence-Based Complementary and Alternative Cancer Therapies Conference. It's on our webpage, annieappleseedproject.org. You can get it from any page on our website. And registration is open, and we recommend people get going early because it does fill up, and we can only host 250 people. That's the fire department regulation. But it's very exciting because the three organic meals, most of the food comes from local organic farmers, and it's very, very fresh and very elegant food, really interesting. The fresh squeezed juice that we make on Friday and Saturday morning, so that's a way for people to understand organic and detoxing. Lots of great information. We've had speakers from Europe over time and in many different areas of the country and many different protocols, and something for everybody.
And for those who are interested, this is great information. Please check out the AnnieAppleseedProject.org. Great website. You can get information about the conference. And again, Ann, I just want to thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
The show was brought to you by NaturalHealth365.com. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit NaturalHealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. Thank you for listening, and be sure to join us next week for another great show.